We'll call the House Special Energy Special Committee on Energy to order, February 2nd, 10:15 a.m. With us, we have Representative Nagyak, Representative Wolf, Representative Tallarico, and myself, Co-Chair Culver. Today's business, we are going to have a presentation from Energy Committee staff on the issues associated with independent systems operator and the electrical transmission, the rail belt electrical transmission proposal as outlined in House Bill 187. Specifically, we're going to get an overview of what the Regulatory Commission's actions and responses from the utilities have been to date. And Mr. Steve Conkle will present the PowerPoint. You have a copy on your desk. And he'll recap the transmission and integrated grid and economic dispatch issues within the rail belt. So if there's no objection to the agenda, we'll proceed. Okay, hearing none, Mr. Conkle, go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record. Proceed.
Good morning, representatives. My name is Steve Conkle, and I'm a legislative assistant for the House Special Committee on Energy, Capitol 424. And I'm pleased to be here today. Good to see all of you. As Jim mentioned, we're going to talk about some issues associated with an independent system operator, often abbreviated as an ISO, or a unified systems operator. That's an alternative to the ISO, along with address electrical transmission issues in the rail belt area of Alaska. And this has been the subject for the last couple of years of a lot of interest with the RCA and the Alaska Legislature. So without further ado, what I plan to cover, is electrical transmission and region-wide generation. The utilities in the rail belt area, there's four electrical co-ops or cooperatives and two municipal electric utilities. There's been numerous studies and reports over at least 20 years on grid unification.
Just a second, Steve.
Yes.
Yeah, let the record show Representative Tilton has joined us. Welcome.
Welcome. Good to have you here.
Okay, don't go too fast now. Go ahead.
Okay. So in 2014, the Alaska Legislature directed the RCA to do a study, and we'll talk about that. And after that study was completed, commissioned Alaska Center for Energy and Power, there was a report that was sent to the legislature on June 30th of 2015. There's also been a proposal for a transmission company, often called a Transco. And the independent systems operator and unified systems operator issue, I'll contrast those as different approaches to accomplish the similar objective, and then talk about the benefits and challenges of the ISO or USO mechanism for pooling and economic dispatch.
Okay, also let the record show that Representative Klayman has joined us at 10:20. Thank you. Proceed.
Okay, so as you all are very familiar with in the rail belt, it's a integrated transmission line or a single line that goes through these electrical utilities. The first is Golden Valley Electric Association in the far north, GVEA, MEA, the Matanuska Electric Association, Chugach Electric Association, Homer Electric Association, and the two municipalities are Municipal Light and Power, that's in Anchorage, often known as MLNP, and the City of Seward. Grid unification has been a big issue ever since the Public Utilities Policy Act of 1978 was passed. There was a huge benefit seen in the electrical utility industry by separating transmission and generation. And that became the law of the land. In Alaska, our system is much different. And so we have proceeded with various studies looking at the benefits of an integrated transmission. And the proposed transmission approach is known as Transco. We had some testimony from the entities in the January 28th hearing that we held on HB 187, and they submitted testimony on where they are in progress to an integrated grid. In short, what the transmission company or Transco would do is they would either be for-profit or non-profit. They would invest in transmission upgrades, planning, construction, and maintenance. That's their main job.
Sure.
Yes, Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. we've talked about a couple transcos coming up here. I think American Transmission was one.
Yes.
Is that determined beforehand if they're profit or non-profit, or can either of these companies function in either way?
As far as I know, the exact arrangements are up to the proposals with the companies that are all involved. So, for example, American Transmission Company is out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and they are for-profit. And they have worked with the six utilities that I mentioned, and they've put together a proposal on how this would work. But the ARCTEC is another, the Alaska Rail Belt Transmission, that's another proposal that has to do with transmission, and the testimony of Gillespie's in the packet for the 28th. They also submitted some things. So it could be either for-profit, or parts of it could be for-profit, parts of it could be profit. But in effect, whatever arrangement is set up, this would have to be regulated by the RCA. And the RCA, if they invested additional money in the rail belt grid, would allow a rate of return. Does that help?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my understanding, ARCTEC is not a transmission company. They're a USO. And but as far as bringing up a transco, a company that's going to, say, build infrastructure or, you know, improve our transmission lines, whether they're for-profit or non-profit, is determined beforehand. In other words, if American, for example, American Transmission comes up from Milwaukee, they are a for-profit company. So if they come up, it will be a for-profit system, where if you get, say, Acme Transmission or wherever, and they happen to be non-profit, then you'll have a non-profit system. It's not, it's determined by which company comes up, not by which profit system they would employ.
That's right. Correct. That's my understanding, too. And it's just a good point to keep in mind that there's various ways of organizing that and that affect the rate of return and the RCA regulation. Financing is very important. There have been studies done that have said there's additional investments that would be profitable to move electricity through all of the service territories. And the rate of return is based on regulation, as I said, by the RCA. So in terms of a quick snapshot of history and objectives of rail belt electricity generation, in 2014, the Alaska legislature appropriated $250,000 to the RCA, and RCA contracted for a study with Alaska Center for Energy and Power. That was completed by Anthony Scott within a year, and the RCA wrote a June 30th letter to Senate President Kevin Meyer and House of Representative Speaker Mike Chenault, and it outlined five key findings and recommendations. And the way this was couched is in terms of the benefits of an integrated grid and economic dispatch. If you put the two together, then the benefit is for consumers, because consumers don't get just the electricity generated within a service territory of a certain entity. They're allowed to use the grid and share power. And if you're doing economic dispatch, then what you do is you take the most expensive units offline, and then you use the power that's the most economic. And that's where the benefit was with the Public Utilities Regulatory Policy Act. That's a big issue, because it saves lots of consumer dollars. The estimate has been in tens of millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars. So that's why the Public Utilities Regulatory Policy Act of 1978 was passed. It's been updated in the Energy Policy Act and in 2005, so this has been of continual interest. And another issue I might just mention here is the access to the grid has been an issue, non-discriminatory access. So there are renewable energy sources and others that would like to hook onto the grid, and those policies of access to the grid are another particular issue. The major benefits of grid integration then are to be determined. In the ASEP study, they did some modeling to look at how much money could be saved, and the estimate was $50 million to $150 million. So in this particular budget climate, this kind of efficiency where you could save tens of millions of dollars from a different way of operating this as a regional system rather than as four co-ops and two cities is something that's been of great interest. And we had some good testimony on that last Thursday. The Transco was basically an approach to deal with grid integration, and the RCA set two key deadlines. The first status report from utilities they asked to receive by September 30th. The second one they asked by the end of the year. Those were both submitted, and they were signed by all of the utilities, and those will be in the backup documents that are that we have for this meeting and outside for the public. The dates on those actual status reports, the first status report was exactly September 30th. The date on the second one was December 22nd. So you'll see that second milestone. The RCA also said, we're really interested in this concept of region-wide management and planning and integrated resources planning. So we've got another deadline. And that deadline was this last Sunday, January 31st. And as far as I know, there's been two submittals by two different utilities that were received last Friday by RCA. One of them was Matanuska Electric Association. And the Chugach submittal is imminent. So that's where we are. The submittal now, the milestone deals with a USO or a ISO. Sorry for the French. It's, you know, a unified system operator or an independent system operator. And as you heard last time in the testimony, the key to that is probably that term independence. And the other part of it is probably governance. So for these benefits to be realized, an integrated board needs to think of what's good for the customers in the region as a whole, and not necessarily what's good for my service territory kind of thing.
Steve, there's no difference between ISO and USO, independent or unified system operator?
I think there is a difference, and philosophically it has to do with how much a utility representation is on the board. You could have a USO, and it could be all utilities and a public interest member or two, whereas the independent system operator envisions having the capability to run a region-wide system, but having the utilities integrated into that, but not have a majority on the board.
Would you briefly explain to us what these briefings are that are due now in the regional management concept? What is the RCA looking for, and what is the response so far? What are they drilling into on there?
Well, to be perfectly honest about it, since I got these last night, and the main ones have not come in yet,
right.
I think it's a little premature to
What was the RCA's intent to ask the utilities to provide that response?
The RCA's intent, they made findings and they made recommendations. And the finding was that there's benefits from grid integration and there's benefits from economic dispatch. And these can be realized, and they've been realized in other places, and there's other models. We prefer for the utilities to get together and develop a voluntary approach. And we think that should be the first route that we take. But then at the very end of their recommendations, they said, we're prepared to work with the Alaska Legislature and the Alaska Governor's Office, the executive branch, to implement this if the utilities do not make sufficient progress on this approach themselves. So it was kind of a, on the one hand, on the other hand kind of thing with the five findings and recommendations. And they did this consistently through their findings. And so what they expect to see is the tone and the progress from each of the utilities that submit. And they could have been like the Transco reports where they said, here's the overall plan, like with the ATC, the first status report or the second status report, and here's everybody signed to it. It looks like this one will probably come in from individual utilities and say, well, we have a loose power pooling arrangement, for example, and here's the benefits we got in the last quarter when we did this. And we brought on new generation that can use other people's fuel, and so we see some benefits, but it's a little early to tell how big they're going to be. So that's one submittal. That's the one that I know the best. But I think we need to hear from each of these entities, the four co-ops and the two cities, to really know how they view this prospect of getting there in real time.
Well, in the past they've been very suspicious and proprietary, but it seems like barriers are being broken down, looking for common ground to have economic dispatch.
Yes, we definitely heard that from Brian Hickey and Brad Evans at Chugach, who seem to be leading things. It's true with Eric Myers and the American Transmission Company. It's true with David Gillespie and others that are saying, we're making progress and we're moving through these things. However, some of it involves modeling and benefits and costs and bottom lines and board of directors. And so for all of this entity to form, it really needs everybody. We can't have three of the six rail belt utilities that say, well, this is a really good idea, and three of them say, we don't want anything to do with it. Because you won't be able to move the power all the way through from Homer Bradley Lake all the way up to Golden Valley, or put on renewable energy at Ewa Creek and get it into the system, or move Fire Island wind power up through the system if it's needed up north. But it has a multiple set of tariffs that are added every time it goes to another jurisdiction.
Okay, please proceed. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. a couple points. You mentioned the six utilities being at the table, obviously, or maybe not obviously, but I would imagine some of the independent power producers would be there, too. They might have a little different view than the six big players. And I know that last week, and as mentioned here, ASAP mentioned $50 to $100 million in savings through economic dispatch and using the most efficient power generation at different times. And it seems, and it seems that I recall when asking some of the utility people here last week, some of them may have been downplaying some of the savings and more talking about reliability, that this would enhance reliability. But it seems to me if you're not going to save a fair amount of money, I mean, there's other things, efficiency and air pollution if you're using a cleaner plant in a less sensitive area. But it seems to me that if you have a potential savings of $50 or $100 million, that would be a prime mover in all of this. Are the utilities all on board with these kinds of savings numbers, you know?
My understanding is all of the utilities, ARCTEC, and the American Transmission Company all are agreeing with the RCA that there are substantial benefits to grid integration and there's substantial benefits, non-trivial benefits, to economic dispatch. So I think they all agree on that principle. When it comes right down to we're going to put our power into a loose pool and how much money do we get for it, or we've got to pay for the capital of this, or, well, even if this isn't being used because it's got the highest fuel cost in the mix, we still want to recover that, or our ratepayers are going to be affected by this. So models will always be uncertain, whether it's the New England Power Pool or the New York Power Pool, and they're trying to forecast load and which generation will be used. But the benefits are from the system-wide operation. And I think you're right, the qualifying facilities, that are the independent power producers that want access to the grid, everybody in the utilities that I've heard has said, non-discriminatory access, that's the law of the land. We agree with that. That's got to happen. They've got to be allowed to compete.
Well, Steve, last week most of the utilities were in town for a hearing. Can you explain what the concept and some of the comments on these proposals on the transmission entity and the system operator, where they felt that you needed to have both of them because there would be winners and losers depending on each utility. They've incurred a lot of debt for all this generation capacity that we have now, and so there's those issues out there that the rates of return. Did you talk with many of the executives and the folks in utilities on how they're trying to balance cash flows, and that they felt like they needed both of those systems to be in place for it to work? Could you kind of just...
Yes, Representative Culver. I had a chance to meet with some of the CEOs and executives. We didn't specifically talk about financing and rate of return and recovery, but we talked about their approach and their philosophy. And the problem that you mentioned is a problem that's taken four decades to get into, and people are hopeful that it won't take four decades to get out of it, but sometimes it takes at least as long a time to fix a problem, like to get out of debt, as it took to get in it. And the problem is we've been talking about integrated resources planning in the rail belt since the 80s, and now utilities have invested in new facilities, and brought things online. So we have more capacity than we need right now in the rail belt, and more things that are that need to have a rate of return because those investments have been made, like in new natural gas facilities or the Klutna generating station. So your point is a really pertinent one, that there are significant issues and there could be winners and losers. But the other point from a region-wide point of view is if there's regional benefits, then one of the things you're talking about is how do those benefits get redistributed. And so, yeah, it's an art doing that, but part of it is modeling, and models are different, and they'll give you different results, and people can run different models, and they can get different results based on what they're thinking about what their interests are. So this has to really be a negotiated settlement among the utilities. But if there's significant savings, there's not only enough savings to do a good job to making people whole or allowing them to recover from some of their generation investments, but there's also enough to provide a direct economic benefit to consumers of rail belt electricity, and that's where the really large savings are, in the tens of millions of dollars or greater. So there is a way to do this with the models, but I think most of the utility executives that I talked to said this involves six entities, these negotiations can be complex, we have different working groups, and they're progressing at different paces, and so be patient. Is what I heard from them. Be patient. But on the other hand, there's other people that will say, well, the problems are really significant, and we're making a little bit of progress, but we're not sure when we're going to get there. And so I think what we need is a roadmap with some milestones that, and with exception, one exception I can think of, everybody has agreed, this is not a transmission company or an ISO or a USO. That the idea of a Transco to deal with grid integration is a great idea, and we can do that at relatively quickly when all of the parties agree and they're on a single sheet. And some of the status reports reflect that, I think. That doesn't get you to integrated resources planning. It doesn't get you to this bigger picture of how much generation do we need. It doesn't get you to the question, are the new investments environmentally acceptable? Does the project pay for itself? Do people want it? Those kinds of things. So in the long run, we want to do both. And so the answer to both is, do we need an ISO or USO? Absolutely. Got to have one of those, too. But it could be a variant, and we could look down south, but Alaska's different. Okay. We have 600 megawatts there.
Representative Tilden has a question for you.
Yes. Hi, Steve. Thank you for your giving us this information today. We go back and talk about the concept of winners and losers, and what I'm wondering is if when the utilities are structuring their settlement and proposals, we've only heard about a winner-loser type of a structure. Is there some kind of structure or proposal where it's more of a win-win situation where, so that, you know, it's not definitely a winners and losers type of settlement?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Tilden, through the chair. I would say that this is like a lot of classic negotiation, that if people pose it as win-lose, then people are going to dig in their heels and look at what's good for them in any proposal. But there is a way to structure this like a single negotiation text, and the way that could be done is through the RCA. The RCA has the commission and chair, and they've got the track record with the June 15th letter, which was very clear and articulate, I thought, to the legislature about what their plan was, and now they've got these milestones. And so, to some extent, the ball's in the RCA's court about, are you serious about this? But if they're serious about it and there's region-wide benefits, then everybody could be better off than they are now. There aren't winners and losers. Like, I remember back in the 40s, you guys built this and we didn't get to talk to you. That's all behind us.
Right.
I just need to... It requires a change of culture, and that's what's really hard in some of these institutions is people have long memories. But you're right, this is the way this will work best for the rail belt consumers is win-win, and not investing in things that don't make sense from integrated resources planning.
Well, Dr. Tilden, I guess that was my incorrect use of terminology. I think it's more synonymous with the gas balancing agreement. So if you know, we talk about Point Thompson and Prudhoe, and if one of them's not producing gas, they have to have these agreements on compensation, depending on what gas supply goes into our proposed LNG. because there's different amounts of savings depending on who's got the cheapest power. So they, what they told us, if I could recall, Steve, was that you needed the transmission entity and the independent system operator, and then there has to be benefits that flow from each, because each individual utility has different cost structures, and so that you, the benefits need to flow, you need both of them to make it work. I think that was the concept, that there's different cash flows involved. You can't just do one, in other words. You can't just do a transmission cooperative. That may benefit some utilities and burden others, but with the independent system operator and the combination with the transmission co-op, if you will, benefits can flow to both. And one of the other things that they told me is, well, we're trying to deal with the governance structure, and they talked about having these independent boards of directors, and it seemed to be like there had to be professionals, and it's kind of a new concept because we just have lay people in our society, in our communities on the boards. I was a little taken aback when they said, well, they're going to be like large six-figure salaries, so I think we're going to need some more information on that. I don't know if that would be our recommendation. It seems like we're all in a cost reduction mode around here.
Correct. Well, that's my understanding, Representative Colbert. That's exactly the point behind the Public Utilities Regulatory Policy Act, is this separation between transmission and open competitiveness and open access is good for renewables, but it's good for the system-wide, and it's good for the cost of power production and more of a level playing field. And the governance issues are key.
Oh, Representative Clem's got one for you.
Going back briefly to the ISO-USO distinction, and it sounds like you don't necessarily see one or the other, or can be a hybrid of the two. My understanding of the kind of a sort of, I'd call a pure USO, would be one, and essentially it's just the power companies are part of the uniform system operation, so you wouldn't really have a consumer presence on their governing board. A true ISO, or sort of a pure ISO, would have no utilities on the governing board, and I think what's been talked about a lot on this committee is have a governing board for the system operator, whether it be a USO, whatever you label it, giving utilities some seats at the on the board, but a minority of the seats, so that you would have consumers and other individuals serving on the board that would not be beholden to the utilities, but that would really be able to have a majority of votes if the utilities couldn't convince them of the truth, rectitude, and other righteousness of their perspective. My sense is, many on this committee, I'm only speaking for myself, but I kind of get a general sense that the notion that if the utilities have a seat on the board, they're in a minority seat, would sound like that's why you say it would really not necessarily be one or the other, but kind of an Alaska version of both. Am I fairly summarizing your perspective on that?
I think that's correct. And I agree with the way that you stated that. I think that's an excellent way. I think another way to think about governance, which is maybe a little bit different, is how do we maximize the benefit to rail belt consumers? So if somebody brings to the board expertise in power pooling, it doesn't matter if it comes from the New England Power Pool or wherever, that could help increase that benefit from reducing the cost of power and distributing it. And what we don't want is people with a special interest that want to be on the board to protect it, because that will mean the region-wide view will have to be compromised.
And following up, you said there that it sounds like the most, at least on a national basis, the groups that are thought to have the most specialized interests are actually the power generators. And here in Alaska, we actually have kind of the little consumer like me who pays his monthly utility bill. But there's also some fairly large electric consumers, like some of the commercial interests and some of the mining interests, that actually use quite a lot of energy. But they fit within the definition of consumer as well.
That's correct. And so Alaska is different, so I think we need an Alaska-based solution for this problem. But the good news is there's lots of experience. There's experience with transmission within the state of Texas and other models. ATC and others have brought expertise that wasn't here in Alaska. And I think in terms of Representative Tilton's point about a win-win, there's things about Alaska where Alaska knowledge is incredibly important, and we're going to have some big decisions going forward. There are studies that say we need to invest almost $1 billion in transmission. Well, that's only if we add thousands of megawatts of power in certain places that we'd need that. So we have to realize that all information isn't equal in this, that we're probably going to expand the grid and integrate the grid, but we're going to do it in a way where we can afford it, because we cannot continue to subsidize projects that aren't economic, and we can't recover the cost. The project does not pay for itself. So that would be an operating principle that an ISO or USO would adopt.
Let's go to the next slide. Okay. Representative Wool, go ahead.
That's a lot of questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Steve, let's see. You just mentioned $1 billion of infrastructure possibly.
And I probably overstated it.
No, I've heard $900 million,
rather. Yeah, $900 million.
We can call that a billion. A couple questions. Does that include Susitna-Wautana Dam build-out, or is that somehow integrated into that number? And secondly, you said we can only afford so much. My understanding is the Transco would come in and build it, and then they would just charge the ratepayer. It would affect our rates, basically. So the more they build, the more our rates are. So in a sense, we as the state or the utilities or ratepayers don't really pay for it up front. So, I mean, in some ways, we can afford whatever they want to spend, but it's probably in our interest to keep that number down so as to keep our rates down. So those questions, and then I got one more if I may follow up after that.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Well, the first question about the $900 million, is my understanding, is that does include Susitna-Wautana, but I haven't specifically looked at all of those studies, and that there are significant benefits from grid integration and substantial investments, and yes, they would go across all of the ratepayers, and they're a relatively small cost compared to something like a major investment in generation, like Susitna-Wautana. That's $5.2 billion or $2.6 billion of it has to come from somewhere else. So I think you're right. It's relatively pennies for the grid integration benefit. So that's a reasonable perspective, is that it's going to depend on how that's organized and how fast the Transco is put together.
Okay, a follow-up.
Go ahead.
Four of these six utilities are cooperatives, so they're owned by their members, the consumers. If this system integration saves the ratepayer money, that seems to be fairly agreed upon. There's some winners and losers within the utility pool, perhaps, maybe win-win if we can, they or whoever can work that out. But does it seem simpler that four of them are co-ops in that, you know, they're not private entities that are trying to maximize profit? So they say that they want to just maximize benefit for their ratepayers, and if this system integration does save the ratepayer, then it's just the fact that they're co-ops is sort of a win-win. I mean, does that help the situation that the four of them are co-ops as opposed to six of them, six private entities?
Well, my understanding is if they were all investor-owned utilities, this has evolved historically.
Right.
And the co-ops. And so there's good things about that, and there's challenges. With these size of loads in the lower 48, it would have been likely that we would have one or two entities rather than six. So it is something that we just have to transition from the historical accident, the way this has evolved, to where we want to be. But I think we have a clear vision of grid integration and economic dispatch. And I do think the cooperative, if they're looking after their consumers, there's a way to do win-win in terms of, you know, thinking ahead. And right now we don't need generation, but in maybe the next decade, that'll be the issue that'll be in front of the Energy Committee. So I can go through. I don't have a lot more for you, but I'm good rock and roll. Yep.
Let's go to the next slide, which has to do with the grid reorganization or grid management problem of moving power around. So just before we get started on that, let me just kind of put a few things out there that have been recognized as hurdles. Some of the six utilities have transmission infrastructure. Golden Valley has, like, Healy to Fairbanks and then down to Delta Junction. MEA has a little bit, but not very much. They have one from their, some from their generation plant, including in different areas. And then there's the, there's one that's jointly owned, I think, by three utilities. It's the Eklutna, it goes to the Eklutna facility from Anchorage. I think that's MLP, Chugach, and MEA, I'm not sure. Then there's the, Alaska Energy Authority, which owns the, intertie from, like, Willow to Healy. And then there's, Chugach has it on the Kenai Peninsula. But I think there were several bottlenecks, beginning, like, for instance, Bradley Lake is usually the cheapest power at certain times. But you run into a bottleneck getting to the Healy Fairbanks intertie. Golden Valley wants to buy, Bradley Lake power. They're constrained by infrastructure in MEA's district. So the problem kind of is that these entities kind of would contribute their capital, in other words, their invested infrastructure in this entity, but some of them would have a larger share than others because they have more infrastructure. And so I think that's kind of the difficulty that they're facing, how to balance out the ownership and equity, and then what role does AEA have as far as that system. So I'm sure this is stuff that you've been working on and discussing with these folks. On.
That's an excellent characterization. One of the problems, to put it another way, look at it from a problem standpoint instead of an opportunity standpoint, because you can invest and make that easier to move electrons and bring on generation and things that you know, like Bradley Lake, that you want to get those electrons throughout the grid. That's going to be important to lowering costs. But the particular problem of if you're in one service jurisdiction and you got to go through three or four others has been known as pancaking. And what it means is you have a series of tariffs. And if you can go from 10-cent power to 22-cent power, then you got a problem at the 22-cent end of the multiple transmission tariffs that have been added onto things. So that's one of the reasons that this approach makes infinite sense in the Transco approach, because that entity can come in and help solve those problems. Some people want a postage stamp rate. And whenever you put an electron in the grid, it costs just like, the same amount. And other people talk about what they call a unified system of tariffs, which means that it's closer to one price, but there may be some slight adjustments to it rather than major additions so that it's not economic to move power within the grid. The Transco would solve that problem.
Right. And could it be a structure that it's just a negotiation between utilities? Let's just say you create another co-op. It's not even a for-profit, it's just a cooperative, and that they develop internal tariffs. So if an electron goes through Golden Valley's district, they get paid X. If it goes through MEA in the shorter, it's Y. And then they use that entity to have a unified tariff amongst themselves where you don't have that pancaking, and then leverage capital to upgrade those and maintain that system. That's one way to do it, but the other way is bring in a fully capitalized entity and work out negotiations for contributing capital and having shares in a new entity?
Yes, that's correct. My understanding is that the first proposal you made is reasonable and doable, and it could be done through another cooperative or another mechanism. However, one of the major objectives of expanding the grid, in other words, if you have a single kind of strand that goes down all the way to the Kenai Peninsula, just like an interstate highway, a double strand would be kind of more reliable,
right,
fewer problems and bad weather and all of that kind of stuff. That's going to require financing, and people on the financing are going to want a rate of return. There's still ways to work that into various business models, and it's going to be regulated by the RCA. So it may be a combination of what you say to deal with the first part among the utilities, but also think about where do we get the capital to invest in the expansion of the grid and whether that has to be for profit or there's another way to do it.
Do we what role is AEA playing? Would we be better off to just contribute those assets to a future entity and get the state out of the business of maintaining and owning power lines? What function, what value are they adding? Of course, this is when we had a lot of money and we did dam projects and these kind of things. So what's their role?
Well, I think it would require a little more analysis to fully understand AEA's positions and policies. But one of the things is they have been responsible for two major developments. One of them is feasibility studies and things that are associated with Susitna Wapana Dam. And that gives them a certain interest in how would that work. And they've also been interested in integrated resources planning, where more than $1 million was spent on how do we do power planning in Alaska. So to some extent, AEA is an entity that, based on its mission and how it looks at the world, takes positions on these things. I can tell you my understanding from testimony to RCA is they've said there are benefits to grid integration and there are benefits to economic dispatch, and we're all for them. So at least at the high level, I think they've been very supportive of however this sorts itself out. AEA wants to contribute to helping get these benefits in both of those areas. They may a little bit be like a utility, though, which I'm on board. If there's a specific proposal, they may say, what if I take this to my board of directors and they don't like it? Am I going to be the messenger of bringing bad news kind of thing? And so they may feel that they have to overall have a very, very positive news, you know, that, hey, we've solved some transmission problems. We've opened up non-discriminatory access to the grid. We're able to use our more economic generation. We're not going to lose money by cooperating in this loose pooling arrangement, which is then going to move to something that's more region-wide. And so that independent systems operator thing, people may say, well, we're not going to have as much control as before. But maybe the way to look at it is we're going to have more of a role in providing these regional benefits, and we have this expertise that we bring, and this is going to work out for us. We're actually going to be able to make money on this, rather than there's winners and losers, and we're afraid that these guys are bigger or they have more history or whatever. So, yes, as the chair said, we're kind of going into some of these challenges ahead as laid out by RCA. That June 30th letter has set out two key milestones. Two of them are behind us. One of them is smack, we're right on top of it. We're right on the bubble. So the first status report on the transmission, or the Transco, came out September 30th. Really well. It was also signed by all of the utilities. It looked good. The second one was December 22nd and reported on progress. This third one is January 31st, which is just this last Sunday. So we're really, that one is evolving very quickly. I think it's very important to understand how RCA is interpreting that. I do know that it'll be probably the 23rd or the 25th when they're...
What are they looking for in this latest milestone?
I think what they're looking for is insights into the ISO and the USO and how that would take advantage of the benefits of grid integration from the perspective of the utilities. And then they want a progress report, because they couch the recommendations on, we want a voluntary effort, but we want to see clear progress. So what are the milestones? And it's not, we're going to do some modeling. We're going to reach a decision by kind of in this time frame, where we've looked at the region-wide benefits, for example, from economic dispatch, and we think we can solve these other problems through working groups or other things. This balkanization, that was one of the challenges. They specifically used that language. They said there's been many contested regulatory proceedings, so that would make you a little less optimistic. If every time there's a regulatory proceedings, the parties don't necessarily agree. That was something that RCA mentioned, and the problem of moving power. So I think we understand that. And the institutional structure is problematic. In other words, the utilities kind of looked out after their own interests and protected their own turf, their own service territory. And what we need is a culture change. What we need is, we're serious about grid integration, clear benefits, let's get this done. And then when we have that, okay, economic dispatch is what we want. Then we can do that. And there's savings. And consumers, you're going to be saving money for this, so it's a good idea. and then we're going to open up the grid so that, you know, if you have a proposal for power and it doesn't need to be subsidized, or even if it's a project that's in some way or another financing or other thing is supported by the state, those projects all have to compete. So we're going to be competing on price. That's the message.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We keep saying the ratepayers are going to save money, but there may be some utilities that don't benefit as much. Are there some ratepayers that are going to pay more? In other words, if I'm living next to Bradley Lake and I have really cheap power and, say, Golden Valley is more expensive power, and suddenly it gets equalized through economic dispatch, and Golden Valley pays less for power, does, you know, Homer ratepayers pay more? And is that some of the pushback that the utilities are demonstrating?
Representative Wolf, through the chair, my understanding is that's an issue, and it has to be resolved. Whether it's a major issue or would stop region-wide dispatch, I think it's another question. And the exact level of these benefits, in terms of tens of millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars, does depend on modeling and a lot of other things. And Chugash mentioned how they've set up these work groups and they're making progress. And I've even heard people that I think are objective observers say I've seen more progress in the last 3 years than I never ever could imagine before. So things are moving in the right direction. On the other hand, I've done a lot of work with models, econometric models, load forecasting models, things that deal with capacity. There's some uncertainty in these things, and they have to be dealt with the utilities on a technical basis, and these things need to be negotiated. So the benefits from more efficient operation of the system, that's just a placeholder figure at this point, this $50 million that I have up on the board.
Seems like we've already covered a lot of what's in these next few slides just in,
yeah,
in our conversation. Maybe roll to the ISO or USO and down to where the meat of the issue for the committee is.
Okay. So.
What's the role of statutes, policies, RCA, how that all intermeshes or... What is the regulatory authority saying, and what are the utilities saying as far as what needs to happen, if anything, from the legislature, within the RTA, and amongst the utilities themselves for any of these concepts to go forward?
Thank you, Co-Chair of Culver. It is a very critical and complicated issue that you bring up, but the regulation by the RCA, they've tried to set up a process whereby we can make progress, and the best fulcrum of where they're coming from has been two dockets. One of them is I-15-001, and one of them is I-13-001, and those are essentially pretty far along, and they do deal with grid integration and transmission. They do deal with qualifying facilities for renewable energy, and they deal with access to the grid, and they're... I think the record that I got from RCA is 1,400 pages. It's got a lot of testimony in it, but these things are complex. What they have laid out is that we need a non-asset-owning entity that does exactly what you said, is ISO, Independent Systems Operator, or Unified System Operator, in conjunction with the Transco. So I think the general feeling is the Transco stuff is moving along. There is this issue on how the utilities feel about the ISO or the USO, and that's not clear yet. We just have two submittals from last Friday. I've looked through one of them extensively. It raises issues as well as talks about progress, but it doesn't counter the thing that there are not benefits. They don't say there are not benefits. They said in the fourth quarter we got a lot of benefits, and here's how we did it. We did it through loose pooling. So this was just arrangements within themselves. So that's a good sign. If they said this is crazy or it's going to cost our ratepayers money, that would be another kind of response to it. And they seem to be willing to go forward. That's just from reading one of those. The other stuff on the Transco, the status reports seem to be clear, but this entity, the ISO or the USO, has more uncertainty in it, because of some of the issues that have been raised here earlier. Some of them might say they're winners and losers. This isn't win-win. We don't like it. our ratepayers could have to pay for something. Other people may say, we don't know what independence means, what an independent board is. We don't see what's unique about Alaska. But I think those are all things with the committee, those understandings of how this has worked and how it could work. The RCA is either going to say, thumbs up, utilities are on track, we're comfortable, we're just going to kind of take a pause and see what they do over the next few months, or we're going to look at some milestones eventually. That's one approach. The other approach is, well, we really need some legislative authority to do what we haven't been able to do in the past. And it's not with transmission, it's with this independent systems operator kind of issue. So the RCA, we'll have to hear directly from them, I believe, to see where they think we are. I think almost universally people say, we are making progress, and we're getting there. But we can't have somebody say, well, we don't like the way the model works, or the inputs are all bad, or I don't agree with that milestone in July. I think we got to go stretch that and go back and invent a new model. And I think that's relatively uncertain. I don't know the utilities themselves well enough and the technical people to know how RCA is going to come down on this, but my feeling is they've been waiting for these reports, the January 31st reports, and they're going to read each of them carefully, and I don't expect there to be one report for all of the utilities. And it's just my own guess, but my guess is there's going to be multiple perspectives rather than the status reports which were signed off on the transmission side. So I think the transmission side's moving faster, would be my assessment at this point. And so with statutes, I don't know what those might look like, but I do know how they fit in the Section 42, and we have things in there that, and the Renewable Energy Fund and Evolving Technology Funds, and all of the pieces I think are there to deal with generation issues, and the transmission issues don't necessarily need new legislation as far as I can tell. They need an agreement between the four cooperatives and the two municipals, and that's doable without creation of a new entity. But it's the difference in, is this going to be voluntary? Are the utilities totally on board? And is it moving? And are we satisfied with this? We're going to get this done in fiscal year 16, 17 kind of thing? Or looks like we need an alternative to that. That's the big decision, I think. And then the policies in the executive and legislative branches, this involves all of those entities that have a stake in this, from Alaska Energy Authority to the independent power producers, to the Alaska Power Association, to the electric utilities. We have a certain situation, but I think it can be rationalized. We know where electricity is generated, and we know how much it costs to the consumer. So this is almost a textbook stuff.
Can you, as a follow-up, kind of reach out to the Energy Authority and kind of like be able to brief us on what possible roles they will have in the future in any of these agreements, organizations, their assets, so that we can like maybe have a recommendation on what role they would have going forward.
I'm certainly
we have oversight over what they're doing, and to a certain extent it's a state-owned asset, so.
Thank you, Representative Culver. I'm certainly willing to do that. I have had experience before dealing with power plant construction in the New York and New England power pools, and at Oak Ridge National Laboratory, where we did a lot of the siting and environmental work for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So I'm familiar with the load forecasting and some of these other issues and some of the policies of AEA, and I'd be happy to look into that further. I know they've just issued, by statutory deadline, a Renewable Energy Fund report,
right,
where understanding those and the projects that we've got in the pipeline is going to be important going forward, because one of the things this approach opens up is competitiveness in the electricity. And that's a good thing, because it's going to save consumers a lot of money. And so we want that. We want a competitive marketplace for electricity in Alaska.
We're getting close to wrap up here. Anything else, the committee, Representative Bull?
I'll throw another question out there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the response to the RCA by the utilities, and there's a couple sections on page 3 under independent transmission company. It says...
Rep, well, what, are you talking about the September 30th letter?
Yeah.
Okay, it's on your desk. It says on the top of the sheet from the Regulatory Commission, it's a letter from all the six utilities?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I just, clarification, I guess. But say under independent transmission company on page 3, it says, governance of the Transco must balance the need to effectively operate and invest in the rail belt's transmission infrastructure. So the Transco is making sort of investment decisions about the overall transmission system. And then, and it's governance, this is an independent transmission company, so governance of the Transco, we're assuming is done by, I don't know if they're meaning ISO there, that's just the Transco itself.
Right, it isn't ISO in that case.
Not the dispatcher.
And they would have to work in conjunction with regional planning for generation. But this is the transmission investments specifically. And if they bought out all of the transmission assets of all of the companies, that's another thing. And then does all that go in the rate base? And RCA gives them a rate of return on the whole thing. There's a lot of different kind of business models at play here.
Okay. And a quick follow-up on
it. Yeah, go ahead.
So on page 6 under governance, the governance subgroup is in task of creating the Transco governance and organizational structure. So, again, this is the structure of the Transco. Not the system operator. This is just the governance body of the company that sort of owns the transmission lines, correct?
Correct. Okay. And I think it is somewhat more straightforward than economic dispatch,
sure,
integrated resources planning, and the like.
That's where it is. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. That's all.
You're welcome. So I think that gets us all the way to past the USO. And the implications, so we know where we are, and that concludes my briefing this morning.
Representative Klayman.
It seems like with respect to the kind of the pace in which this goes forward, we at some level have a choice in the legislature to either advance a bill that would dictate, here's what we'll call the Alaska system operator looks like, some hybrid of ISO and a USO. We could either do that as a legislature and say, here's what we want it to look like, or we could let the current process continue forward where the utility companies are trying to work through the RCA to come up with a plan for a Alaska system operator that basically responds to interest in having consumer interest represented as well as utility interest. And if that happens through the regulatory process, there's no need for the legislature to get involved, but if we either don't like where they're headed or we get impatient, we certainly have that opportunity to take action if we could build consensus within this building to do so. Is that a fair description of where we are in the system operator?
I think that's exactly where you are in the decisions you face.
Rep, one other follow-up. If I heard the question... If I interpreted your answer to Representative Wohl's questions about the Watana Dam, if the Watana Dam is not going forward or somebody recognized that we didn't have a need for that electricity at this point, actually the cost of whatever transmission upgrades were needed would go down significantly because a large portion of that $900 million is actually putting in the transmission that would be able to carry the power coming from Susitna Watana. If that dam isn't going to go forward, then that would be building capacity that there's not need for in the system.
Absolutely. That's just right on.
Sure. Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Co-Chairman Culver. I appreciate that the utilities are working together, as we are hearing from them, and that they are working together and that they're making progress, and that allowing them to do that and make that progress and continue to work together is probably a good direction for them to go in, and I do appreciate having this 187, I believe it is, brought forward so that we can have a conversation here and know, you know, be better informed in what's happening. I think that we might all agree that kind of putting that on pause and allowing the utilities to go through the process that they need to, and whether it's the RCA or what have you, that's that continue, and we just kind of look in that and look kind of toward that way of moving forward. And the second thing is, when we were talking, and I don't want to beat this to death, but when we're going back to the win-win, I wanted to say that ultimately the ultimate win needs to be the ratepayers and the consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that should be motivating us. And the alternative, RCA, I think, structured this for a reason. They wanted to see milestones. They wanted to see what came out of the milestones. They wanted to understand how difficult the problems are. And they wanted to keep open the option for having a viable alternative to grid integration and economic dispatch, because as far as they see it, it's in the best interest of the consumers. And in this climate, that's a very important consideration.
Okay, well, just, Steve, appreciate your analysis. What I'm kind of hearing is consensus of the committee that we highly regard the leadership of the Regulatory Commission in this effort to bring the parties together towards ISO, USO, Transco, and that we're going to look to the RCA and support them to nudge the parties forward until we get some work product that will benefit consumers. Is that kind of where we're at here? So I think what we'll do as a follow-up is we'll wait till these latest filings are in and we had a chance to analyze them, and then we'll probably have staff recap that for us. I appreciated this today because I know this stuff's really technical. I can't really read these filings and dockets and get much out of it. I'd have to be a utility regulatory attorney. So that's why we have Steve breaking it down for us. So with that, we don't have a meeting scheduled on Thursday. I think the next time we meet, unless there's anything pressing, we'll wait till we get the update from the Regulatory Commission, these latest filings. So with that, we'll call it committee time, 11:20. We're adjourned.